Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How are you doing?
Felt a little newsy with the open today. Like we're the co-hosts of some local news team.
Yeah.
Deeply unpopular.
Every morning people wake up and tune to the other channel because we're over here on this channel.
But that gives us the freedom to be fun, just to keep it light.
Really explore the space in the dumb television studio we work in.
It's all dog stories and
everything human interest.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. That's us. The human interest story of Star Trek podcasts.
You drinking anything over there?
Yeah, I got it.
I know this is a regular ep, but
yeah, we're doing we frequently do pod fairly early in the day, all things considered. And all things considered, also it records early in the day. That's why I said that. I'm drinking a Freem Mexican Lager, which is
that's your fave.
It's kind of been a regular go-to for me lately. It's as you've commented, an extremely light-looking lager beer.
Yeah, it almost looks like a white wine. It's so light.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm having some beers that friends of DeSoto brought to us on our recent Canadian tour leg.
Oh, right. You got all of those in the post-Canada divorce.
You were too scared to put any beverages in your luggage, so I took it upon myself to bring all these beers home.
Did they all make it back unexploded?
Yeah, they're cans, dude.
Dude, a can exploded in my bag.
It was a can?
Yes.
Oh, man. I thought it was a bottle.
No. That's why I was extremely gun-shy about packing beer cans in my bag.
Well, I took the precaution of putting it in a double layer of hotel plastic laundry bags.
Great call.
But I did not have any explosions. I'm drinking a couple of beers from the Whitewater Brewing Company of Ottawa Valley, Ontario. I've got a Legion Lager, and then I've got the Farmer's Daughter Blonde Ale, it says.
Yeah?
Yeah. So that's what I'm drinking.
They sound pretty crushable, are they?
Yeah, I'm enjoying both of them.
We had plenty of great beer up in Canada.
They know how to do it up there, you know?
Yeah, we had we hung out with some new friends of ours at that Edmonton show, especially, who like stocked our green room with like some of their favorite brew dogs.
Yeah, the folks that picked us up at the airport for the Edmonton show had like a handmade sign about being friends of DeSoto.
Yeah.
And we were a little worried that they were going to harvest our organs, but instead they gave us a bunch of delicious beer, and I have some of that in my fridge as well.
That was a moment where you did a bit with a stranger and the bit worked.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't strangers. They were friends of DeSoto. They were ready for my dumb bits.
Yeah, they really were. Adam and Samantha were great friends to us for the duration of the Up and Downtown Festival.
Yeah. Man, it was so cool to go to Edmonton and play to like a real full room like that. And we got to go on our friends Graham and Dave's podcast, Stop Podcasting Yourself, the night before, which was also a ton of fun.
We got to thank Brent Oliver, who was the guy who booked us for that Up and Downtown Festival, a friend of DeSoto. We got to do one of the rare like backstage pictures with someone's family. Yeah. Like including small children, which is kind of a rarity for us.
Yeah, it was really funny. I think his son didn't want to be in the picture, so he held the camera, but his daughter was cool with it.
Smart kid.
Yeah, yeah. That son's going places.
Yeah.
And we, you know, like the photo, they can Photoshop the daughter out of it, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Probably want to.
I think that's probably enough Marin for one day, right?
I think so, too. Let's talk about this ep.
Peldor joy to you, Adam.
And a hearty Peldor joy to you, Ben.
It's season 3, episode 10, Fascination.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No. Of course you don't.
Jake Sisko is having a full-blown like teenage love bum out in his room, looking at some jewelry that Marta gave him. They're on the outs.
He's smelling the like stamp that goes through her ear. Like, because it's an earring, right?
Yeah, it is an earring.
I think the thing I miss most about Marta is the smell of those ear holes.
Her ear piercings have a particular smell?
I don't know.
She got into college, though, and she has done what I did when I went to college, which is pick a school as far from everyone I know as I could possibly get.
Yeah, but you didn't pick a school that was 2 planets away from Regula 1. She got accepted to the Regula 3 Science Academy.
No shit, I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, she's probably studying at like the Carol Marcus Hall, and
I've heard like, that the bars around that campus have great apple cider. They're cultivating a lot of apples in that system, Adam. A lot of apples.
Boy, you definitely want to go to the campus gymnasium named after the super jacked guy. One regular one. It's just all arm machines.
Leg day? What's that?
Is Jake looped here? He sounded really weird in this open.
Turns out I don't have much to be grateful for.
He is lying down, which does change the quality of your voice.
Sure.
But maybe he was lying down and it sounded even weirder and they looped him because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that might be the case.
The advice that Sisko gives him is like, you're 16, you'll survive. That's like the last thing you want to hear as a 16-year-old, right?
We're supposed to believe that Ben Sisko is a cool dad who has like the best relationship with his son. And this is an instance of like him being regular dad.
Buck
like,
up there, sport.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always another train coming.
Plenty of fish in the sea, kiddo.
Yeah, like this is too basic for Ben Sisko.
I think that time in life when you like another person and you get shut down or you break up, you know, whatever. I mean, I didn't break up with anybody at that age. Nobody was dating me in any capacity where a breakup would be necessitated. But a couple of times I like asked a girl to dance at a dance or something and I got shut down and it hurt. It hurt in a big way. You can't imagine life going on after that.
I resent Deep Space Nine as a program, as a project for giving us the idea that Marta was going to be a going concern, establishing her in name and reputation only, and then giving us an episode with her where things go so well, only to unceremoniously like dispose of her like this.
Yeah, she's just written off the show.
I think that's fucked up. I don't like it at all. I think you have to bring her back for this episode.
I think Sir Rock Lofton plays this scene super well, though. Like, he understands what Jake is going through, and he really puts it all on the screen.
I feel like they told Sir Rock Lofton, look, act like how you feel about Marta not being brought back to this episode. Like, be that upset about it.
Yeah, you guys are not going to have a kissing scene ever again.
I think the reason that Marta's not in this episode is because if she were, the makeouts would be hypersexual.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
We also get a breakfast hang with Bashir and Chief O'Brien.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
And O'Brien is... He reveals, like, he kind of came up with this thing a few episodes ago to, like, have Keiko go reconnect with her highest calling, which is to be a botanist.
Be a botanist, Keiko.
And the idea was she was just going to be on Bajor, so, like, no big deal to, like, visit on the weekends.
Well, Bajor's only 3 hours away in a runabout. We can manage.
She's been gone for 2.5 months, and they have not seen each other at all.
And... like any couple who's been away for a long time, I think they've seeded some expectations about what might happen on this weekend furlough. Ben, if you know with any certainty that there will be sexy times happening,
yeah,
what do you place as your limitation on cups of coffee ahead of time?
You know, I know that there are folks that get smelly when they have too much coffee.
Oh, I've never heard of this. What? Like they smell like coffee or smells like something else?
Yeah, I think they smell like coffee grounds coming out of their pores or something.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Is that not what you're talking about, Adam?
I feel like
or are you talking about coffee making you need to poo?
I'm talking about that. I feel like this is playing with brown fire.
Well, I try not to brag about this, Adam. Especially around you.
Is this another story of your great sexual prowess, Ben?
It's more of my colonic prowess, which is that I have an extremely regular schedule, W/R/T elimination. It happens in the morning, and it is not a concern for the rest of the day.
Wow. What must that be like?
I don't know. Yeah, like I hear people talking about it, like, oh, I got to make sure, you know, before I get in a car ride. I'm like, really?
I've got a shit of Damocles above my head 24/7, man.
Butthole of Damocles.
Yeah, that's no fun.
Like I said, I'm not trying to brag. I'm just trying to say, like, where I'm coming from is, yeah, have all the coffee you want, O'Brien. You know, wow. Have one in the afternoon for all I care.
Yeah,
not going to change anything.
Give him extra energy. He's ready.
I realize now, Adam, that I need to check my regularity privilege.
Yeah. How dare you toilet signal me? I really like the scene with Bashir and O'Brien because there's some unspoken stuff happening here, which is that like they have become each other's relationship proxy, because Bashir has not been able to find himself in a regular relationship, and because O'Brien's wife is absent, they rely on each other for companionship. And it's like not sexual, obviously, but like they spend a bunch of time with each other, time that would otherwise be spent probably alone and frustrated
playing Spider-Man on PlayStation 4. You know, like, you don't want to do that the entire time.
They're leaving it all out there on the racquetball court.
Speaking of unrequited loves, Odo,
Mr. Bunkin,
walks up to Kira, who's out on the promenade helping the Bajorans decorate for this big festival that's coming up.
Peldor joy, Odo.
Peldor joy to you too, Major.
It's a very like high school, like I'm gonna go kick it to this girl kind of thing, where he kind of invites her on a date, but there's plausible deniability on this being a date. Like,
yeah.
If you're not busy later and you're going to be at the festival, I will also be at the festival. Perhaps we will do festival together or whatever. I mean, no big deal if not, but just saying. And she says, yeah, like I'll be at the festival with my boyfriend, Vedic Barayal.
That everyone knows is my boyfriend.
Did I ever tell you about the time that in high school that like I had a crush on a girl for like a year? Like a solid year, like 12 months, like a summer went by in the midst of this crush. that I did not see her at all because she lived very far from me. And at some point, like in the middle of a school day, I was like, I don't know what I'm waiting for. You know, she doesn't have a boyfriend. I'm just sitting here. I got to go ask her out. I got to go do it. And I was like down by like the tennis court or something. And I decided to like walk to the main school building, see if she was around. And on my way to like the main school building, a mutual friend passing the other way goes, Ben, you hear Steve asked Edie out? They're going together now. Like that news just like dropped out of the sky on my head the second I like got up enough nerve to go like do something about what I was feeling.
Wow.
Yeah.
What timing.
Amazing. I mean, saved me a big scoop of hurt.
You take a different route to that destination and things end differently for you.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Mike. Thanks for telling me. I'm just going to the bathroom. I wasn't doing anything but that.
Wow.
Odo does not get the same courtesy in this moment. He just like has to stand there with a plate of shit under his nose when he finds out that that Beryl is on his way to the station.
It's a different thing, right? There's a difference between an infatuation with someone that is, you know, undeclared and an interest in someone who is taken.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that they've chosen to take the second route with Odo.
Because she wasn't always taken, and they didn't telegraph any of the interest that he now very visibly has in her then.
I think part of it is that Vedic Beryl fucking sucks. and everyone knows it, and especially Odo. That's the third thing, right? It's like the first thing, unpronounced love for someone. The second thing, love for someone who's already connected. Third thing is love for someone who's with someone who sucks.
Yeah, that was the toughest thing about that girl in high school was the guy that she ended up with. Like, I ran into her like a solid 10 years later in a coffee shop in New York, like just out of the blue. I like turned around and there she was. And I did not have a relationship of any kind at the time. And I said, wow, amazing to run into you here. Like, what are you doing? Like, catch me up on your life. And she's like, still with Steve.
Oh, no. Did she say it like that?
No, but like...
Can't get rid of him.
They were like high school sweethearts who ended up together in a way that I like admired, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
So Kira and O'Brien wind up waiting at the door to the airlock together, going, who are you waiting for?
Keiko.
Ah, Beryl.
Good luck.
And then the door slides open, and it's like, it's still facing them in a way that, like, you could almost hear, like, the record scratch. And I was so ready for the camera to turn around and cut to Keiko and Beryl making out in the airlock. Like, I couldn't believe that it didn't happen. It was like so perfect for that, but also I understand why it didn't happen.
This is a really well directed scene, and this is an Avery Brooks directed episode, and so there are a lot of interesting choices being made throughout. And this A versus B scenario only serves to underscore how painful it is when things aren't going great in a relationship. Like, to have new love next to worn-in love.
Right, like quotidian married love.
It's hard to compare those two.
Yeah, because Keiko is totally fucking wrung out from traveling with a small child, which I can only fucking imagine how exhausting that is. The kid is sick. She like boots in Miles' lap the second he says hi to her.
Yeah.
And the fuckfest that you're waiting for as the dude who has been living the bachelor lifestyle for 2.5 months is fully called off in like 10 seconds flat, you know.
As soon as Molly barfs on your junk, like that's done. It's over.
Yeah. Yeah. The couple of days, like you may sneak something in by the end of day two, but long odds on anything going down in this visit at that point.
Nothing and no one is going down this weekend, O'Brien.
And a further slide whistle because it is revealed like the thing that has made Keiko the most stressed out on this trip is she had that person next to her in the seat on the airplane that insists on talking.
Oh, boy. Loxana definitely seems like the type that would not regard that you're wearing earphones on a plane and will, like, tap on you to have a conversation.
This is maybe a corollary to the first rule of Greatest Gen.
Yeah?
It's a, you know,
this is
obviously,
1A.
Like, do not lean your seat back is the most important part of that rule.
Yeah.
But that thing of somebody is sitting next to me and therefore I am entitled to have a conversation with them, not a thing.
Not a thing.
You had a recent experience with this on one of our tour legs, am I right?
This was the Minneapolis to Toronto leg, is what this was. And I was sitting next to a lady who was, I mean, super nice, but that was part of the problem. Because I was listening to podcasts and staring out the window from my window seat, and she wanted to talk and was not taking headphones for an answer.
Right.
She was talking through the headphones, like looking at me and talking, and like I had to take them off because to wear them would be weird. Like she totally forced it. And it wasn't like urgent conversation about anything in particular. She was like, "So how much longer do you think the flight is?" And I was like, "Well, I think we were all told it was an hour and 45 minutes.
I think there's a screen directly in front of you on the back of the seat that you're sitting behind that
yeah.
can tell you everything you need to know about that."
I mean, and I understand if she's like a nervous flyer or whatever, and like I don't feel like she's a bad person for this, and I don't feel like people are bad people for doing this, but like there's like...
Which is why it's not the top line of the rule.
It's the etiquette of being in public or being with other people in a confined space that I think is sometimes lost
right.
on people.
And it's like, you know, the person you're tapping might have some hang up or social anxiety or need to focus on whatever they're doing, you know? It's like, you know, when you edit an episode of this show, you send it to me to QA before we publish it. And occasionally I will be doing the work of listening to your episode, which is always fun for me. And I love hearing how you edit it and the drops you put in. And it's an enjoyable experience. But to all outward appearances, my wife sees me walking around the house with headphones on. She's like, "Ben is being an asshole right now."
Right.
And wants to talk to me and have a conversation. And it is hard for the casual observer to see what is happening as anything but just, you know, you shutting the world out for no good reason.
Why didn't my seatmate know I was listening to Stop Podcasting Yourself? Like, that's what she needed to understand. That could not be interrupted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
how are you supposed to hear overheards when you're overhearing her bullshit?
Ben, there's a great big event on DS9. It's the Bajoran Indigenous Peoples Festival. Otherwise known as the Gratitude Festival, which feels like a very Thanksgiving adjacent type situation.
"We need to cook up a new holiday for the summer. Something with gifts, cards, assorted gouzables."
Yeah, it's like Yom Kippur and Thanksgiving kind of rolled up into one. You're writing your problems down on a scroll and letting them burn away.
I like seeing this kind of event. You rarely got anything like this on the sterile Starship Enterprise D. Like,
yeah,
it's fun to experience this culture in this way with a celebration and a parade and a band and stuff. This is great.
You know how like airports and hospitals sometimes have like a interdenominational chapel?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the D has something like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it would have to.
"Now you are asking me to send them back into the dark ages of superstition and ignorance and fear? No!"
Do you think that Deep Space Nine has something like that, or is it all Bajoran religion?
I mean, if I were a betting man, and I am, I think I would bet on Bajoran.
Do you think that there are people on Bajor that believe in a different religion that also arose on Bajor? Or is everybody the same religion on Bajor?
I see where you're going with this, Ben. And I like it. Because because the idea that... Because
everybody knows the old adage, there are no atheists in a Bajor hole.
The idea of like an entire planet observing a single homogenous religion is... It seems kind of far-fetched.
And semi-horrifying. Like, and what did they do to get to that
rife
point?
For conflict, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Everybody else that believes something not this, we killed.
Yeah.
Is basically what that implies.
Yeah. Loxana Troi is there because she heard about the Founder situation.
She's undergone interstellar travel to go comfort Odo in his time of need, which is... It's a weird thing of like emotional intelligence and emotional stupidity at the same time on her part, because she wants to be there for him and like comfort him, but also like everything he is feeling about it is something that she imagines he must be feeling about it.
Right.
You poor, sweet, tortured man.
This knowledge that she comes across seemed very far-fetched to me, Ben. And so... I did a little bit of research.
Oh, no.
What I found was there were lines of dialogue removed wherein Loxana Troi discloses that she and Admiral Nechayev...
Admiral Nechayev.
And Valerian Canopus?
It's Admiral Nechayev.
Are those Valerian Canopus?
Admiral Nechayev.
Canopus my ass. That's a Ritz cracker and chopped liver.
Are great friends.
Whoa.
Kindred spirits is what she called them, and said that she heard about it from Nechayev. She heard about this Founder situation from her.
Wow. Do you think that she and Nechayev like a nice chopped liver on a Ritz cracker?
I think they enjoy some canapes together, and they just dish. They just get together and dish, Ben.
I love the mental image of Admiral Nechayev and Ambassador Troi just kibitzing over some Valerian canapes.
Absolutely.
Fun.
Why didn't they give us that great gift?
Every time there's a Loxana episode, Star Trek like looks right into the camera. Like in this episode, it is Keiko doing Atomize to camera right before the theme drops. It's that.
What does that mean?
It's that, you know, the look on your face when we're getting out of a particularly bad ride chair or something like that. or you get off an airplane that you've just had to talk to somebody the entire time.
I love that Atomized to Ben camera is a thing now. That's canonical greatest gen.
Yeah. It is Trek being self-aware that this is an obnoxious character that is obnoxious for everybody, including the viewer.
Yeah.
And yet somehow we write it in frequently and we cannot quit Loxana episodes as a franchise.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Yeah. I mean, Star Trek royalty, like when the pocket shows up on set.
Yeah.
Got to put her in the show.
She's really there to make Odo feel better, and he's also the kind of man that doesn't really know how to accept an emotional gift like this. He's not a vulnerable person, generally speaking, and he got pretty vulnerable with her that one time in the elevator, but what that meant for her was we are deeply connected for the rest of our lives, and she lays that all on him, and when she... The second she walks out of frame, he rolls his eyes so hard, I was worried his retinas were going to detach.
And yet, Odo's reaction to her makes me feel sorry for Loxana. And I think that speaks to the strength of her performance. We've spent a lot of time talking about the myriad problems we have with Loxana Troi episodes.
Yeah.
The idea that those episodes are criticized separately from the idea of her as a character or Majel Barrett as an actor, like those are all separate criticisms, I think.
Right.
And I think we feel differently about each one of those things. I think Loxana does great work in this ep. And part of the reason that her character has pivoted from punchline to tragedy is the unrequitedness of her affection, like that she loves so hard on people that it makes them uncomfortable. It repulses them.
Yeah.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
The other thing that happens early in this episode is a pretty hot and heavy Kira Burrell hang.
You said hot and heavy?
And we've seen a bit of this before. One thing that I think didn't happen previously in these, like, Kira kind of luxuriating on a couch and Burrell smooching with her is that I don't think he was in his priest robes before. It is really weird to see a gentleman and a lady making out when the gentleman is dressed as a man of the cloth.
Right.
Like, you never see that. And I know that in some religions it's not frowned upon and in others it is, but like...
You make a great point about like off-duty edition Vedic Burrell. There's also off-duty edition Major Kira, who arranges her hair in a kind of George Clooney from Dusk Till Dawn motif. there are real choices being made by both of them about how they change out of work clothes and work hair.
The transition from work hair to off-duty hair could not be more exciting for me when it is what Kira is doing.
I think Kira's hair choices are great every time, yeah. Including here.
Yeah, extremely exciting. and she's out of uniform for most of the ep, right? She's got a special position this year in Deep Space Nine's celebration of this festival, so... You know, she's wearing her uniform in that first scene when Odo stops by to have her obliviously shut him down. But for a lot of the rest of the episode, she's in her civvies.
She's sort of like the grand marshal of the parade. She has that kind of role in the festivities. She gets to read a speech. She gets to light the torch. She starts the whole thing off.
Little detail gets peppered in that Burrell is actually pretty pleased with how Kai Winn is running things.
I thought that was the reason that Kira was like, hey, I got to go to work. That's my lady boner has totally deflated hearing that. But there's this kind of a skeevy moment here that goes by really fast, which is like Vedic Burrell does that fucking thing where he tries to plant the seed of breaking up a girl friendship so that the person he's interested in has more time to spend with him.
Yeah.
What the fuck, Burrell? Fuck you.
Yeah, that's a dick move.
You never want to try to break up a girl friendship.
That will only end in misery for you.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to talk about maybe the scariest part of this episode, which is it's a scene which maybe should have a warning ahead of it for anyone who's married?
A trigger warning.
Because...
the scene where... O'Brien is sitting on a chair drinking some beer and Keiko walks back into the room.
This is a very, very realistic fight between two people who love each other. Like,
because
wow.
The O'Briens are back at it.
I was, God, this scene just wrecked me. And not because, like, this is what life is as a married couple, but because when it swerves into this area, like, this is how fraught these moments are. When one or the other person believes that they are making concessions to benefit the other, like, because, you know, like, part of a marriage is, like, giving and taking and sacrificing and, like, making the other person happy. When that is... responded to with resentment, and then that resentment mounts, and then there's like insufficient answers to fairly benign questions, and then like that irritation that someone gets.
I'm getting a panic attack the more you describe it.
Right? It's terrifying. And to see this happen on screen in such a realistic way, great moment in this ep. Hyper realistic.
It's the second like really like... And it's just Miles and Keiko together. Like the second scene that we've seen, just the two of them, directed by Avery Brooks, that is like this. The first being, I think it's the episode where O'Brien is put on trial, where that first scene is just them in a runabout cockpit, like headed out on vacation. And
that's right, he did direct that.
The dynamic is like so intoxicating and like exactly like the funnest thing about being in a long-term committed relationship. This is like that it's like right on that knife edge of like, we're supposed to be having fun and somehow instead we're going to have a fight.
I want Avery Brooks directing a rom-com. Like, I think his ability in this area is expert. I think he's really great at this.
Because, like, she's super wiped out. She's like, all I've been doing is fucking looking after our goddamn kid, making choices all day, and there's a bunch of shit on my plate right now. Like, we have to, like, go do this stupid festival. There's parties. There's people that want a piece of me. I am wrung out. I am not here for this shit. I feel exhausted. And he's like, well, let's like make concessions to that. Like, let's find a chill way to like service some of our obligations, but we don't have to do everything, or we could do nothing, like whatever you want. And she's like, I don't want to pick between all of those things.
Just tell me what you want to do and we'll do it.
Miles, I've been making decisions all day long.
And that's a real thing, you know? I have strong affinities for what Keiko is going through here, because I often find that I am, as a function of being a member of a couple, committed to things that aren't necessarily on the top of my list of things to do, but also feel obliged to do them. But also sometimes I'm like psycho emotionally not up for them. And it is hard to admit that sometimes and defend yourself against them.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Part of what makes this scene great is that we are all Keiko and we are all O'Brien.
Totally. And if I had a nickel for every time my wife had tried to get me to wear the sexiest clothes I own out to something.
Those silk boxers, yeah?
I'd be a rich man.
So the gratitude festival is underway, and people at the festival are juggling and rolling balls in their hands.
Experts suggest feeling for lumps in the shower when the body is relaxed.
A weird amount of like circusy shit is suffusing the show. Like somehow the showrunners have really like taken the Ren Faire Kool-Aid this season.
The higher, the fewer.
Yeah. At a few instances during the episode, Loxana has sort of made a gesture to her head in the head-on style fashion.
Applied directly to the forehead.
And Jake makes one of those motions early in the ep too, after which he makes a hard pass at Kira. Like, capital P pass.
I love you, Nerys.
The sort of bravery of a Tom Riker driving the Defiant into 10 Cardassian ships. Like, yeah. Wow.
He wants to dock his Defiant in her airlock.
Except to Kira, Jake has always been cloaked to her, right? Like, she's never seen him on her radar. This comes as a surprise.
A big surprise to her. And the funny part of it is that, like, she kind of misinterprets what he's saying as him asking her for advice about how to kick it to older women. But, like,
you never want to say that to an older woman.
Right.
What are you doing, Jake?
But also, he does that, like, super high school thing of saying, first, I love you. Second, do you want to go out with me?
Yeah.
That is the wrong order, man. And the wrong order by, like, months.
I think Ciroc Lofton is great in this episode because these are fairly thankless things to say. The line on the page is, I love you, go out with me. Like, how many different ways can you do that while still achieving some sort of, like, human moment there? It seems really hard to do without becoming a punchline. And it's a little bit jokey what's happening here just because of the power dynamic between them. But, like, right. He really is sincere. And his performance is what makes it work.
Yeah, it might be the last thing that works in this episode.
Yeah. You know what really works, Ben? The scene where Dax and Morn are sitting by the fire fountain, and the length of Morn's scroll is comparable to his crank. Dax is like, boy, that is a great big scroll you have there. You should really just stick that in the fire.
feel like a lot of ladies would be pretty impressed by that scroll.
He's got some prodigious scroll.
But you can't have it out here in public.
This is a family event, Morn. Like, it's such a throwaway scene, but it's great. They do that right.
Very funny.
Feels like a while since we've seen Morn.
Yeah. Welcome back, Morn. This is also the scene where Beryl comes and confesses some sort of schoolboy love for Dax in a way that is very similar to what Jake Sisko just expressed to Kira.
And he's headache horny in the way that we now understand this show to work. Like, it's fairly early on in the ep. We've seen two people do head on.
Apply directly to the forehead.
And now there are some choices being made with respect to romantic interests. And that's unfortunate, Ben, because, like, the secret's out. And what are we, like, 10 minutes into the episode?
Yeah, I think maybe, like, 15 minutes into the episode. Like, the what is going on is, like, beyond obvious to anybody that's watched a Lwaxana episode before.
Right.
She shows up. She finds Odo listening to a band. She has put on her "May I Speak to Your Manager" wig and attempts to seduce him into some dancing. But he is—he's not really having it. He's not—he is not sensitive to the thing that everybody else is sensitive to.
I'm with Odo. How are you supposed to dance to, like, pan flute and marimba?
Yeah, there's no rhythm there.
Yeah.
He wants to drop it like it's hot. He wants to shake his ass.
They kind of sound like island rhythms.
One of the most delightful things to me about our time in Edmonton is I walked around one morning and there was a big farmer's market happening.
Uh-huh.
And there was, like, a guy with a steel drum playing, like, some island rhythms at the farmer's market. It was really nice.
I like a steel drum.
Yeah. One of the most beautiful instruments.
Yeah. Sounds nice.
When I was in high school, I really wanted to learn it, and I tried to convince my parents to buy me a steel drum and, like, help me figure out a way to take lessons. No interest in their part.
You know, of all the instruments that indie rock has co-opted, you've got your melodica, you've got your pedal steel.
Of all of the artistic expressions that whites have stolen.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, like the hurdy-gurdy of the Arcade Fire. Like, there are all of these things, like cultural appropriations in music. No one has thought to steal the steel drum.
When was the last pop song you heard with a steel drum in it?
I mean, is it Red Red Wine?
I think it might be the 50 Cent song, P.I.M.P.
Oh.
Doesn't that have a steel drum in it? But that, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what his cultural extraction is, but I feel like it's less problematic for him to use a steel drum than for the Arcade Fire to use a hurdy-gurdy.
What are you doing now? Could not be guard.
Exactly. Dax gets a headache, Ben. This is the first of many scenes where Dax's off-duty uniform is fairly revealing and beautiful because Terry Farrell is a beautiful person. But one can't help but notice that, like, she is showing a little more than most in the ep. And I think this is because of a story that popped up and continues to pop up, which is Terry Farrell's purported reason for leaving the show was a compounding number of incidents wherein Rick Berman, like, encouraged her to be more sexy, to dress more sexy, to, like, pad her bra. He was very, like, lascivious with her, allegedly, during her time on the show. And she commented on this in that 50-year mission book.
Oh, wow.
And her comments are on the internet for anyone to read, but pretty terrible look for Rick Berman. Pretty awful situation that Terry Farrell found herself in. And it's something that, unfortunately, like, colors an episode like this, where her manner of dress is fairly innocuous because it's, like, off-duty Dax and she's partying, and she's like being amorous with people. But like, you see, when it's her, it's different because of this story. And I think that's too bad. And I think that should be mentioned when we talk about her in this context.
Right. Because when you're an actor, you're entrusting a lot of personal vulnerability to the people you're working with. And a person like Berman is in a position to cause a love scene to be put in the show, to cause a scene where you are in a sexually revealing outfit to be put into the show.
Yeah.
And that's even more power than is typically had by a boss in any job.
Yeah.
And also, you know, when you're an actor, your job is to like go into yourself and find the emotions that you need to express and dig that stuff up in front of everybody. And actors have freakouts on sets all the time. You know, you hear about your Christian Bale melting down on set and stuff, and people make fun of it, but it's also kind of an occupational hazard. You know, you're
right.
If you're digging into yourself and like touching your emotional third rails to get access to those things, to express them on screen, to make them present so that we as an audience can feel them, you're raw a lot of the time.
Right.
And imagining what it is like to be that raw and exposed, and also to some extent under the sway of somebody that you don't really trust with the charge of like treating that respectfully and artistically, is pretty scary and kind of a sad thing to think would happen on a show that has as high of ideals as this.
Yeah. I think we all feel like Star Trek displays like an idealism that we should all seek to achieve. And this is one of those contrasts. It's like a contradiction where like some of the perfections on display in this future are made by imperfect people.
Yeah.
And sometimes bad people. And it's fucked up how someone like a creative executive could give cover to their terribleness by calling it a creative decision or saying like your character would do this.
Yeah.
You know, like that's such a terribly chicken shit way to be an asshole to a coworker.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Well, moving on from that.
Dax's headache results in her spinning off in a flirtatious way.
It does. We catch up with Quark, who's trying to hawk pens to write your sins down on those pieces of paper.
Yeah. He's not in the paper business. He's in the pen business.
How many pens do you think he had there? Do you think he's in the Pen 15 Club? And then we find Miles and Keiko up in their traditional second floor Quark's bar hang. And she's laying some bad news on Miles. The bad news is that the expedition that she has cycled back from only briefly may go on quite a bit longer than anyone anticipated.
It's another element of a long-term relationship that is painful, which is the thing that is better for one person often is a sacrifice for the other or painful for the other person to accept. The idea of Keiko being gone another 7 months really hurts O'Brien here.
Yeah. He's like, man, I might actually have to get the runabout and come visit you on the weekends like we talked about before.
And then was summarily dropped for some reason.
I mean, he is not great about receiving this information. He gets petulant and, you know, I think there's a way to express what your wants are and what your feelings are about something that don't kind of recriminate the other.
Sure, but Keiko also mentioned a work husband in the context of this argument, and that should not have happened.
Yeah.
You got to keep that to yourself.
You don't have to explain away Trevor while describing this thing that is not going great for your husband.
Yeah, that's this thing of ours between her and Trevor.
Yeah. You know, they just like to flirt around the water cooler. It's totally chaste.
He's a friend.
A friend.
So that doesn't go well. Neither does the discussion between Sisko and Jake in the aftermath of the Major Kira pass.
Mm-hmm.
Another not great dad scene for Ben Sisko. Like, of all the ways that he could discourage his son from going down this path with Kira,
like spraying a garden hose at him.
Like the one thing he doesn't choose to say, the one thing that no one chooses to say is that like love is a two-way street and you never want to have to convince someone to love you.
Right.
Like yeah. That is never on the table at any point between any two people in this episode.
But man, like I think that that's something that like all of 80s and 90s media didn't understand in a weird way.
Like, because that's core conflict and that's like how you write a story is like what person A loves person B, but person B doesn't know or doesn't love them back. Like that's the beginning of most stories.
The moment in college when I realized that you don't get a girl to love you by standing outside her house with a boombox over her head was like a total like, oh, you
right?
know? I really resented all media for a while after that because I was like, I feel so misled.
Right, right.
I thought that girls didn't like boys until boys convinced them to like them.
Yeah.
And in fact, that is not at all how it works.
Yeah.
That's the opposite of how it works. Like you have to both like each other and then you get together and see if it works.
But the second one is so much harder to depict in 48 minutes.
Yeah.
On a television show. And that's the fucked up part, is that it's easier to do the worst thing.
The worst thing that is like, it encourages like the kind of thinking that Rick Berman is accused of, right? Like
it starts with Pepe Le Pew. Like how many kids watched Pepe Le Pew hop his way at the lady skunk hour after hour on Saturday morning cartoons?
I didn't watch Saturday morning cartoons. I just watched Pepe Le Pew on loop. It ruined me, Adam.
It was Pepe Le Pew and Foghorn Leghorn. That's how I learned. Those are the seduction techniques that I knew of until college.
That's why when it really got serious between me and my wife, I said, I say, I think I love you.
So dumb.
You really want to do this here, now? Okay, let's do it.
Speaking of like... people having strong opinions about how the dynamics between men and women should be. Quark gets to rail on about this a bit in the episode. O'Brien is like bumming out about the fight he's had with Keiko, and Quark kind of rails on him about how the Ferengis really haven't figured out.
You humans, you never learn. You let your women go out in public.
A really like... specifically misogynistic society, you really like smooth over a lot of these rough edges.
I really do like any scene that depicts old-fashioned bartender advice, like the scene of Quark like cleaning out a glass, talking shop with O'Brien is satisfying almost every time. Until he tells the story of what married life is like on Ferengar, you know, that's not great. How's that supposed to give O'Brien any peace?
Yeah. So what you're saying, Quark, is I should strip my wife of all of her dignity?
I feel like O'Brien should turn to Quark and be like, what the fuck are you wearing, Quark? You're wearing the jacket of a retired women's club going out for Easter brunch. What the fuck is this?
Yeah. What are you trying to, what signal are you trying to send to the world? That you're awesome at canasta?
Everyone's off-duty clothing and hair is I think, cool and interesting. Quark wears a Bajoran earring, like, commensurate with the size of his ear, and that's fun.
It is so much more elaborate than your average Bajoran earring.
But the jacket combo is not good.
Yeah.
If that's Ferengi formal wear, I'm not a fan.
So all of this has been building up to a big Sisko family feast in the wardroom. And everybody's been it's like the junior prom where everybody's angling for the wrong person to take to it.
Oh, and that's a great description.
And you know, Beryl wants it to be Dax with him, and Kira is hurt by that. And everybody's like both totally infatuated with the person that they're infatuated with and totally skeeved out by the person that's infatuated with them. Like Beryl is super weird and distant with Kira all of a sudden. It's the Mexican standoff of wanting to fuck.
everyone's pointing either dicks or tits at someone.
What a predicament.
It even like makes Sisko laugh, right? Because Dax is really putting the moves to him. It almost gets to the point of her like unzipping his fly. It's so, she's coming on so strong. To the extent that it's like a smash cut to medical readout.
Yeah. You know what? That is an interesting transition, isn't it?
and it's Bashir going like, yeah, as far as I can tell, nothing wrong with her. And she's like, there's nothing wrong with me. The only thing right with me is looking at that booty, Benjamin Sisko. I want that.
Avery Brooks's laugh is so great.
Have I ever told you that you smell wonderful?
You know, old man, I have to admit, you had me going there for a minute.
It cuts through all of it. I can't help but laugh when I hear him laugh in this character. Yeah. It's so much fun.
It's really fun.
I don't know how he does it. It's great. I mean, look, this is the sort of Ben Sisko emoting that I think we made fun of in the premiere episode, as if it like it wasn't a good fit, or like it didn't work in that first episode. But to hear him break in this way here seems totally earned and good.
I will say that, like, as a director directing actors, what he is doing in this episode is working. He is getting great performances out of everybody. Like, leaving Six Bay, Dax is doing, like, I'm so excited to have introduced my new boyfriend to my dear friend, like, happy couple vibe. And he is still doing, like, good, I'm glad we solved that little problem. Like, I am oblivious to the fact that she's still doing it vibe. And it's exactly what that scene needs. It's so funny.
Yeah.
But the story is so dumb and preposterous, and it's like Ren Fair imagery, and it's a bit like a Deep Space Nine always doing bits.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
Kind of a problem.
What's a food that you pick the good stuff out of and leave the rest?
Like a trail mix that has M&Ms in it?
This feels like, I mean, I love a trail mix, but this feels like the snack mix that you take all the good stuff out of. Like, there are such good moments in this terrible episode. And that's one of them.
A lot of the building blocks are great.
Yeah.
Like, even O'Brien's kid is great in the episode.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, Molly's she only cool.
She only has a couple of scenes, you know, like the scene where she yaks on his groin, the scene where she's playing with the pig and he sends her into the other room.
She's a strong child actor, and she's as young as they get for who we get to see on Star Trek in general.
She's about as young as can be like trusted with having a line that she says back.
Yeah.
And she does it. And that's in the midst of O'Brien and Keiko really being like down in the dumps with their relationship. This was like one of the weird parts of the episode to me, because neither of them is like sprung off somebody else. Like, right. Neither of them is under the influence necessarily of Loxana. I guess maybe Keiko is, because she was sitting next to her on the flight the entire time, and it's about proximity.
If the rule of what's happening, if what Loxana is transmitting to other people, if the rule of that game is that you must be attracted to someone who does not share that attraction to you, I mean, there's a moment where the math of that makes sense between Keiko and Miles, and that's a little later on.
I mean, I think the rule is that you just have to be attracted to the first person you see that you have any latent attraction to at all.
Yeah.
But the conflict between them doesn't seem to be related to that at all.
There's a scene where O'Brien like leans up against the bedroom door and tells her that like he's going to give it all up. He's going to resign and go to Bajor and then Earth after that, if that's what it takes.
Bollocks!
Yeah, he already left the iPad on Sisko's desk.
And it's heartbreaking that the voice on the other side of the door says, I just need time to think. Like that lack of resolution here is pretty terrifying.
And then O'Brien has to do that awful thing of having a lot on your mind and going to a party.
Yeah, that's never fun.
No. He's like sitting in the corner, feeling all his shitty feelings, trying to think of a way out of it. And the only person he's got to talk to is super love-sprung Jake Sisko. That's not what you want.
Loxana's headache infects Bashir and Kira. And they get down to some bad, bad kissing. Like,
yeah.
Like they cannot synchronize the opening and closing of their mouths in a weird way.
This is the kissing of two people that do not want to exchange any saliva if they can get away with it.
Which is weird because they're in a real life relationship at this point.
Are they really?
Like, Nana Visitor, I believe, has his child less than a year after this.
Whoa!
Or something like that.
I didn't know that. I had no idea that they ever got together.
They kiss like two people who are trying to act like they're not in a relationship and are like acting like they don't want to do it. Like, that's sort of the vibe that I got, which is great meta acting, I think.
Man, that's fun. I had no idea that they had had a real life relationship.
I don't know if it was generally known at the time, but it certainly turned into like a marriage and children.
But are they not together anymore?
No, I don't believe they are.
Hmm.
So I still have a shot.
I mean, get in line, man. Line forms here.
All right, fair enough.
We say as two happily married men,
yeah,
who are just crushing on a Navizator at all times.
You know. So basically the party is going weird as fuck. You've got Baril trying to propose to Dax. You've got Dax like loving up on Sisko. You've got Bashir and Kira sucking face in front of everybody. This is very upsetting to Jake. Keiko shows up in the aforementioned red dress, which is very exciting for O'Brien. It seems like maybe like this is the resolution of their B story in some ways.
Yeah.
Did you really mean it about turning in your resignation? Mm-hmm. Well, you better get it back before Commander Sisko sees it.
Which is nice. And they get like a real nice, like, they go in for close-ups when they go in for their congratulatory kiss with each other, where, you know, they put the promist filter on and they just look so excited to be together. Get to see that covetous Keiko dimple, and she smiles up at him.
It was hard for me to feel great about this resolution because this had come just on the heels of like career chicken being played. What do you make of like careers being used as bargaining chips in a relationship like this? Feels fraught.
It does feel fraught. I don't think that he was doing that at her, though. I think he was doing it for her.
Yeah. I completely agree, and that's not how I meant it. But like,
I think that they've like if there's career chicken, it's been on a much larger scale. Like she made major sacrifices to be with him and come to this station, and now he's saying, I will now do the same for you because you've done your time, and maybe it's time for us to, like, I can't be 100% priority Miles O'Brien the entire time.
Yeah.
We have to do things for both of us.
I realize I've been really busy on the station not looking for nerve gas, but I'm ready to dedicate myself to you now. I mean, it's not all gauzy reconciliation here. Like, this is a scene where Baril throws a punch at Sisko, who then gets punched out by Dax because the sexual Mexican standoff has come to a head. And, like, it's all out.
Yeah. Quark has shown up with pudding, and it boils over for everybody.
Quark makes a pass at Keiko. That doesn't go well.
I need you, Keiko. My ears tingle at the sight of you.
She's about as horrified as we've ever seen her.
Bashir and Kira are pawing at each other in such a way that, like, it's almost Saturday Night Live-esque. Like, when they do gross makeouts on that show, like, they're, like, kissing the entirety of each other's faces.
Yeah.
In a comical way. It seems fun to be Bashir here.
Yeah. But they figure it out. all of the puzzle pieces fall into place, and there's a nice like S edit where the camera is on an outraged looking Lwaxana Troi at the party. We get the diagnosis, and then we smash cut to Six Bay where Bashir is like, yeah, you have like a disease that is because of your telepathic powers fucking with everybody around you.
Yeah, and also Cisco's like, don't go to Kira's later. Maybe give it a couple of days. Great advice.
Yeah. Yeah, Cisco is like somehow kind of stayed above the fray in all of this. And yeah. And Bashir's like, okay, well, off to smash the major. And Cisco's like, why don't you take an extremely long pause on that, buddy?
There's that thing he's experiencing that I feel like is a little bit familiar, which is you have a drunken makeout with someone at a party and you assume that means like, oh, like we're gonna like go hang out again and like see where this goes. But it's just party makeouts. And right. That's it. Like, there's nothing beyond it. And Cisco has the good sense to recognize this in his counsel to Bashir.
Yeah. I definitely, like, misinterpreted party makeouts as now you're my girlfriend a couple of times in my day.
Yeah, that's a big mistake that Bashir's making here.
Yeah.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
Evening, everybody.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
The button on the episode is little bit of a walkthrough between Lwaxana and Odo, wherein Lwaxana like does an adult breakup with him.
Right, like for a slide whistle of an entire episode, it is so surprising to see this ultra sincere button.
It is so well done, and she is so great in it. Like, really, Odo is super immature and has been from jump about his relationship to her. And it takes Lwaxana to be the adult in the room and to be like, you're obviously dealing with some shit that I can't contend with. But as the adult, I'm just going to say, hey, I really think you're great. And I'm going to be here for you if you change your mind, which is a form of breakup that I think is it's what you want. It's what you hope they are and so rarely become.
Right.
Counterpoint to that is O'Brien seeing Keiko off. They've clearly made up. And she makes it fairly clear that he still has the touch, Ben. The Keiko touch.
Something about him she likes. I don't understand it.
He's transported himself into her heart once again. Bashir meets O'Brien and we're sort of back to one, right? The relationship's been reset between them. With Keiko gone, they can resume their friendship in earnest. And that's the end of the show.
Yeah.
Did you like this episode?
I'm looking at IMDb trivia right now, Adam. Armin Shimerman's least favorite Deep Space Nine episode.
He was barely in it.
Most of the main cast considered this among their favorite episodes.
Oh, really?
Because it was a lighthearted departure from the season's overall story arc involving the threat of Dominion attack.
You need a palate cleanser, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess the costume department loved it because they got to kind of explore what all these people would wear in, you know, out of uniform, which is fun.
Yeah.
I could totally see why a costume department would love sinking their teeth into this one.
You know their review. What is yours?
Corny as hell. And I think that the performances are all like extra fun. Like, I can see everybody having fun making this.
Right.
But I don't see it as being a compelling story or an interesting story or, you know, if it's not compelling or interesting, like maybe it could move the plot line forward in a way that felt valuable, and it doesn't do that. You know, like it is at the very best just a check-in between Keiko and Miles and reminding everybody that Lwaxana still exists. But I think it's better than, you know, Meridian or whatever, but it's still corny.
Yeah, I mean, boy, that's That's a withering comparison. That's faint praise right there. I think if what's on the whiteboard for episode 10 is check in with O'Brien and Keiko, you could do worse than this kind of palate cleanser. I've got to believe it was so much fun to do this episode with Avery Brooks as director. Like,
yeah,
if you're an actor and you're getting yourself into uncomfortable situations with your fellow actors, who better to guide you through that than another fellow actor? Like, that had to be great. Do we need an episode like The Naked Now over and over again? Something that's transparently so naked now, especially?
Right.
There's a version of this where it's violent, where the thing that Loxana Troy is going through is a different emotion.
Right.
Which I think might be worth experiencing, but that it's so familiar for the third time is unfortunate. But like we talked about before, Ben, the good scenes in this ep are as good as anything we've seen in DS9, which is a miracle.
Yeah. And the Miles and Keiko stuff that Avery Brooks has directed are great and really do a lot to humanize their relationship in a way that never was before yeah. he got his hands on it.
Yeah.
So to that extent, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I've got mixed feelings about it, certainly, but interestingly, I like Meridian less than this app. Yeah. So there you go.
Meridian's super fucking corny.
You know, it's never corny, Ben. We never find corn in the stool of our priority one messages. Let's check them.
Let us do it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first priority one message is of a personal nature. It is from Mike, and it is to Kristar Shrimp Kolgar. Goes like this. RSVP Frank J. Kolgar, hashtag greatest gen. Don't forget to send the obit to this online repository for World War II vet obituaries. Was going to text you a reminder, but this is a much more cost-effective way to communicate. Mock just drank Cal's last Dr. Pepper. Cal says, go to hell! Eckard and Meowm Kolgar are fighting again. No solid loafs. Keep it liquid, rats.
No solid loafs? What is that supposed to mean?
They want to poo like you, not like me.
How dare you?
I couldn't tell if there was an actual remembrance of somebody who has passed in that or not. But if so, I'm very sorry to hear that.
Hard to know how much sincerity to give that.
I know. That was a weird-ass P1. And I guess, coming from the Mach/Kolgar-verse, not surprising.
Not at all. Ben, our second priority one message is from Curtis. It is for Lisa. The message goes like this. Ever since I accidentally wore my Comic-Con t-shirt out of the house and an awkward preteen tried to chat me up about it, I am no longer a little bit embarrassed to listen to a Star Trek podcast. Thanks for the disturbing life-size Spock sticker you put in my bathroom for your uncle. Now, how do I trick you into listening to this message?
Whoa.
So let me get this straight. Curtis shares a bathroom with Lisa's uncle?
Maybe Lisa was visiting and she was trying to make it... Maybe Lisa's uncle was visiting and she was trying to make it more festive. But it also sounds like Lisa maybe isn't a listener, which Curtis is attempting to rectify.
But Lisa, for not being a listener, gave Curtis the life-size sticker that was put in the bathroom.
Right.
What a...
Well, she gave it to the uncle.
What a complicated web we weave.
Yeah. Not realizing that Curtis is as much a Trek fan as her uncle, perhaps.
Very complicated. both of these messages very complicated.
Well, if you would like to leave something very complicated for us to puzzle through, you know what to do. You go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message.
Gotta get that gold press latch.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology. With two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
If you wheel the episode to the time code of 20 minutes on the button, you will see Balls Guy. Balls Guy acting as a transition between the exterior of Quark's Bar, where he's selling pens, and the interior of Quark's Bar.
Yeah, we see Balls Guy more than once, right?
Balls Guy is, there was a time when Balls Guy was at dances and raves and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, Balls Guy was a type of guy. And I don't necessarily like Balls Guy, but Balls Guy is hilarious.
This was peak Balls Guy time in the timeline, right?
Yeah. 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 And just seeing Balls Guy for as often as we do in this episode, I mean, I'm sure Balls Guy is great in real life, but sure. like the circusification of this episode.
I'm sure
episode,
he has a lot of like interesting prog rock posters in his bedroom.
Yeah. I'm sure he smokes a lot of clove cigarettes.
I'm sure he has some really passionate theories about what the best Mars and Mystery album is.
I'm sure he's the type of guy who gets to his day job back and forth on one of those weird uniballs that he like that he like puts his feet into and rides around town on.
Yeah.
Yeah, balls guy. That's my Shimoda. Who's yours?
My Shimoda is Keiko O'Brien.
Mm.
Keiko is a great lady, does something I think is kind of unforgivable in this episode, which is, you know, you get off the airplane, you go down the jetway into the terminal, and what does she do? She gets right to the precipice of the jetway and plops herself down on the steps. And I understand she's tired. She's got Molly. Molly is barfing.
Yeah, barfy Molly. Not a good Molly.
But
is that an action figure you can get?
Molly with action barf action. But Keiko, you gotta get out of that doorway. That's where people are trying to get off the airplane.
Yeah.
Got a dime holding up a dollar here.
That's great.
Out of the airlock doorway, Keiko. That is no good.
Keep moving or get out of the way.
That's 1B for the corollaries to the first rule of Greatest Gen.
Yeah, we're adding to the list. We've got amendments to the Constitution, Ben. Yeah. I like it.
You want to take a look at what our next episode is, Adam? See what we got in store and in what mind state we will be as we explore it?
What it is, Ben?
Well, the next episode is first of a two-parter, Adam. It is Past Tense, Part 1. It's Season 3, Episode 11. En route to a symposium in San Francisco, Cisco, Dax, and Bashir are lost during transport to Earth from the Defiant. And another major streaming platform has described it as this. A transporter accident sends Cisco, Bashir, and Dax 3 centuries back in time to a crucial point in Earth's history.
Oh.
This is a famous story arc, Adam. I'm really excited about this.
I don't know anything about it. Is Whoopi Goldberg a part of this?
And no.
And I do believe Mark Twain, perhaps?
That would be more centuries back than we're going back.
Oh, okay. All right.
They're being sent back to what is still the future for us, but is the distant past for them.
Oh, all right.
This is a fun episode. I'm looking forward to this.
So you are saying I'm not welcome?
Never are you welcome.
All right, roll them bones, Ben. We're on square 19 right now. We've got a couple of speed bumps ahead.
We've got a butthole very close. We've got a banger very close. Those are the only two things that we could hit, but both of those potentially send us back quite a ways.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I've rolled a 3.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Which skips us over the space butthole into the warm embrace of square 22, which is a regular old episode from your buddies, Ben and Adam.
Ah, those are the best. We're on a good run of those right now, aren't we?
Yeah. We've stripped a lot of the quirks bars out of the game board.
Yeah.
Because, you know, 1 in every 10 episodes may be more than our livers can handle.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
How dare you call our viewers livers?
Well, that's the next step, Adam. So we'll be back at you in a fun and sober way with the next episode.
That episode, this episode, and every episode is made possible by those that contribute to their production by going to MaximumFun.org/donate.
It is truly painless to have $5 a month taken out of your bank account for most people. And if it is genuinely not painless to have $5 taken out, like, no shame at all. But if you're the kind of person that has a bunch of subscriptions here and there, and you won't miss that $5. Like, please add us to the thing you contribute to monthly, because I know that this show is making a big difference in your commute on Mondays or whatever. You know, like, everybody uses it in a different way, but if you tune in regularly on a weekly basis, I know that it has value to you. And
we hear it all the time. We just came back from tour, and just about everyone in line said something really sweet about how much the show means to them. And if it doesn't mean that much to you, support the production of the show for the people that it does mean something to.
Yeah. You go to MaximumFun.org/donate. There are gifts at almost all of the support levels, but at $5 a month, you get access to a ton of great bonus content, not just from our show, but from all of the shows on the network. So I think it's a really worthwhile thing to do, and it's what I do with the shows I listen to. So I encourage you to do the same.
It's a good thing. Got to thank Adam Ragusea for making the interstitial music and chopping and screwing the original intro music made by Dark Materia.
And thanks to everybody who goes on Apple Podcasts and says something nice about the show and leaves a 5-star review. That really helps the folks out there who are uninitiated find it.
Yeah, this show might not have won a Parsec Award, but it is the highest rated Star Trek podcast on the internet, and that means something, right?
Yeah,
that's award worthy.
Yeah, there's all kinds of places online. If you use a social network, chances are there are people talking about Greatest Gen on that social network. Just search for the hashtag Greatest Gen or join the group or whatever. Those are out there, and fun and well moderated groups. Thank you to the folks that look after those communities.
Indeed, and with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. In an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that for some reason
oh, fuck
doesn't have one of the finest characters in Star Trek history in it.
For good reason.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.